I'm Jackie Leiden. This is The Connection. The bed trick, as defined by Professor Wendy Doniger, is infinite in its variety. The most basic form is when one person uses trickery, masquerade, or disguise to get someone else into bed. Zeus is the master here. The king of the Greek gods was always turning himself into a bull or a swan to get into some mortal's boudoir. But you ask, didn't the recipient of Zeus's attentions have some clue about what was going on? Aye, there's the rub, says Professor Doniger. The bed trick is not always what it seems. Take the example she found at the bottom of a column in the New Yorker magazine, one of those constabulary notes from all over. This one comes from Sudbury, Massachusetts, town crier. She calls it the world's shortest bed trick narrative. Here it is in its entirety. 1:58 a.m. A Hudson Road resident reported a strange man in her bed, but then realized it was her husband. The bed trick, she says, happens often in art and myth, sometimes in life. Connection listeners, do you have an example of going to bed with one person and realizing you've woken up with someone quite different? Or do you see a deeper meaning here in the bed trick? 1-800-423-8255 is the number. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Or join us online at theconnection.org. Now joining us is Wendy Doniger, who may have collected more examples of bed tricks than anyone else on Earth. That's quite a distinction. Welcome.
Thank you very much.
You are such a distinguished academic. You hold the, I hope I don't murder this name, the Mircea Eliade Chair, the Professor of History of Religions at the University of Chicago Divinity School.
That's me.
Where you teach. Quite a chair to hold. And you're also a professor in the Department of South Asian Languages. I believe you're a Sanskrit expert. And you're part of the Distinguished Committee on Social Thought, one of the building blocks of the University of Chicago. And I also know that you like B-movies.
I love B-movies.
So what is it that fascinates you and all the rest of us, I should say, about the bed trick?
Well, the first thing, I love the story. I've always been interested in sex, and I've always been interested in lying. And lying about sex is one of the world's favorite themes, as we discovered during the Clinton administration. And then learning about it in Sanskrit, and then learning about it in Shakespeare, I suddenly discovered that it was all over the place, especially in B-movies. And it seemed to me it was a theme whose time had come, that it was one of the great mythic themes of the world, along with the hero myth and the Cinderella story, that all over the world people were telling these stories, and yet people had always treated it. Shakespearean scholars made the word, the bed trick is a Shakespearean scholar's word. Everybody knew that Shakespeare had them, and people in Greek mythology knew that Greece had them, but no one had ever seemed to notice that it was one of the world themes in mythology, and I thought it needed me to do that.
I gave one example of what a bed trick could be, but you've defined it in so many different ways, so why don't you talk about how it works and where it works?
Well, the extreme form of the bed trick is when you actually discover you have consummated a sexual act with someone under the mistaken impression that it was someone else. And this is a great literary theme. The story of Oedipus Rex is such a theme. He slept with this nice queen, and it turned out it was his mom, and there were dire consequences. It's in Prelude to a Kiss, where the woman whom the young man marries turns out to be the woman's body, but it has the soul of an old man, and he has an increasing suspicion that it's not Meg Ryan in the film, but somebody else. So that's the extreme form of the bed trick, which happens a lot in films. It occasionally happens in real life. There are lawsuits. Sexual fraud is on the books in most states, where someone pretends to be someone else, but they're quite rare. What more often happens in real life is the normal or the weaker form of the bed trick, which is you go to bed with someone and wake up to discover it is not a different person, but a different sort of a person. You thought he was wonderful, and he turns out to be awful. You thought he loved you, and it turns out that he doesn't. So I think that's the real life experience which makes the story have such a hook, whereas the actual real consummated deception is quite rare, I think.
Well, and such potency in myth, and such, I think, a compelling element in our imagination and how we understand our own identity. I'd like to point out that you say that there's often a real trickster involved, not just an accident of happenstance, but someone who kind of actually decides that this is the game that's going to be played.
That's right, that someone wants to get into bed with someone who is not otherwise available, or occasionally, most often with women, wants to get out of bed. You have the story, for instance, in medieval literature of the droit de seigneur, the lord of the manor has the right to sleep with any woman in the village. We call it sexual harassment nowadays, but it was allowed in those days. Yeah. And the woman who did not want to sleep with him would get her sister or her maid or someone to take her place. So there are ways in which the woman would be the trickster in order to prevent a sexual contact. Or you get in Shakespeare's All's Well That Ends Well, where Helena's husband won't sleep with her, and she has to pretend to be Diana, who he does want to sleep with, in order to get in bed with him. So these are active deceptions where people want to get in or out of some bed that they won't be allowed in or out of as themselves.
I was just thinking of Oberon. Everyone is going to be calling with their own favorites, uh-huh. And we want you to, 1-800-423-8255. But Oberon, in A Midsummer Night's Dream, causes Titania to fall in love with the guy. Bottom the Weaver, who's wearing the head of a jackass.
That's right.
And then, of course, he also mixes up the other couples.
There's thousands of bed tricks. And the way it's often played with double casting, the woman who plays Titania, Oberon's fairy queen, also plays Hippolyta in the outer frame of the story. And Hippolyta then gets to meet Bottom the Weaver, who comes to her wedding. And there, in good stagings of the play, there's a look that passes between Titania and Bottom, who have only met when Hippolyta was Titania and Bottom was the ass. So they've both met when they were someone else. But when they meet again, there's a haven't I seen you someplace before moment.
I should say that for those of you who page through the jillions of stories in this delightful book, you have, with great professorial skill, analyze these every which way to Sunday. You've got the double cross back bed trick and the switchback bed trick, and that was harder to keep straight.
The switchback is the easy one. The switchback is where someone pretends to be someone that he or she really is, or where a husband and wife are both trying to get into bed with other people, but the other people are also tricking, and therefore, unbeknownst to them, or knownst to them, as Mel Brooks used to say, the husband and wife end up sleeping with one another under the impression that each of them is committing adultery. That's my favorite switch.
Do you have a knownst to them example?
It's always knownst to the trickster. Mm-hmm. It's always knownst to the trickster, and it's unbeknownst to the victim. But one of the ironies is that the victim is tricked too in a way, because if you're doing this in order to get to bed with someone and that person thinks that they're in bed with someone else, they're not in bed with you. You may be in bed with them, but they are not in bed with you. And this is sort of the double bind that you get, for instance, in Cyrano de Bergerac, where he gets Roxane to love the letters he writes to her, but she thinks she's in love with the handsome Christian. So even though she loves the letters, she doesn't love him. So there's a bitterness in more subtle treatments of the bed trick.
Because it makes you question, why am I loved? Am I loved for myself?
That's right. And the whole idea of being loved for yourself, and the idea that you really know who you're in bed with, that the person whose bed you share really knows you and you know him, is one of the ways that people tend to build up their sense of identity. And it's why it's so shocking not only to be the victim of a bed trick where you feel like a damn fool, but also just to discover that the man you've been married to for 40 years has been sleeping with his secretary all along, that he didn't really love you. That's the mild and normal form of the bed trick, that that if he didn't love you the way you thought he did, then you aren't who you thought you were all those years. And I think that's why it's so devastating to people who have been faithful in a relationship to discover that they've been betrayed for a long time on the side.
Well, that's a theme you see, in shows like Oprah. I want to get back to what drew you into this. I believe that when you began your scholarship, Sanskrit really interested you, and you have a lot of Hindu myths in here, and animals come into play. People are actually, gods are in the shape of animals.
Well, one likes what one likes. I began Sanskrit when I was 17 and went to Radcliffe, and right away I found these wonderful stories where, in particular, the god Shiva took all sorts of disguised forms for sexual reasons. And they're in the first book I ever published years ago. And I also have always loved animals, particularly dogs and horses. And so the beast fable stories, what I call waking up in bed with an animal, seemed to me to express a great deal about human sexuality. The desire to be in bed with an animal, the desire to be an animal when you can't, the envy of the imagined free sexuality of animals and so forth. Mm. Those stories have always meant a lot to me.
Let's go to a call. We're already getting calls from our listeners. The number to call to get in on the discussion of the bed trick in myth, literature, and real life sometimes, too. How do you know who you know when you've gone to bed with that person? It's 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. Kaidi is on the line. Is that your, I hope I've said your name right.
Yeah, you did.
Very good.
I wanted to, as far as the deception goes, the greatest story ever told, Jacob.
Leah, oh, yes.
Rachel.
That's a wonderful story.
Yeah, yeah. And it's like, you know, it, all it took was for her to speak up, but it says all night long he called her Rachel and she never confessed that there was Leah.
That's right.
So
Describe the story, Wendy.
Well, the story is, as it's told in the Hebrew Bible, that Jacob was in love with Rachel, and Rachel's father wanted him to marry Leah because Leah was older, and the older girl was supposed to get married first. And Jacob insisted on Leah, on Rachel, so they tricked him, and they said, okay, you can have Rachel. And in the night, Leah took Rachel's place. And in the morning, behold, it was Leah, the famous morning after line in the Hebrew Bible. And you're right, Leah didn't say a word. But you know, in the Jewish commentaries, there are lots of commentaries on the Midrashim later on, and in one of them, it said that Rachel and Leah connived together, and Rachel was in on it, and Rachel hid under the bed, and in the night, any time Jacob spoke to Leah, thinking it was Rachel, Rachel answered from underneath the bed, because this is a more realistic attitude to it. You do talk in bed, after all, as well, and he would have found out right away. So hundreds of years later, the Jewish tradition kind of patched up the realistic flaws in that first telling of the story.
Thank you, Kaidi. I hope that that answered your questions about that. You have quite a few examples of the Old Testament, or the Hebrew Bible, as you call it, in here.
The other famous one is the story of Tamar and Judah, where Tamar married one of Judah's sons, and he died, and a second son, Onan, and he died as well. And then Judah wouldn't let her marry the third son, Shelah. And then Judah's wife died, and he went off sheep shearing, which I gather is an occasion to get drunk. And drunkenness is used as the excuse for a lot of bed tricks.
Well, that's as old as anything.
That stays around. And Tamar disguised herself by the side of the road as a temple prostitute. He didn't recognize her. He had sex with her. She demanded he give her a signet ring after some other bartering went on. And then when she was pregnant, he was going to have her burnt as a whore, which is actually an unusual punishment. And she picked up the ring and said, "The man whose ring this is the man who impregnated me." And he said, "You are more righteous than I am." And of course, that's how the Jewish race was saved. The children of Judah are the Jews. And if it wasn't for her bed trick, their race would have died out.
Well, there lies the answer, at least one answer, the question of what it all means, and we'll be discussing that further in the program. The bed trick. Join the conversation at 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. My guest is Wendy Doniger, distinguished scholar who's written a book called The Bed Trick, Tales of Sex and Masquerade. You're listening to The Connection. I'm Jackie Lydon, and this is the Bed Trick Connection. We're examining why we are not always what we seem in bed.
She's extraordinary. She is truth combined with fiction. A lovely contradiction.
This is a song sung by the Smithereens, and it was used in the movie Boys Don't Cry, was the story of Tina Brandon, a true story of a young woman, a teenager, who masqueraded as a boy in Nebraska and was
That's a true and rather, and a lot of the true bed trick stories are tragic. The literary ones are all very funny. It's an old, dirty joke. But in real life, especially the transvestite stories, which are the extreme form, it might be, we might imagine that you could go to bed with John and mistake him for Jim, but to mistake him for Joan, it seems more shocking to our common sense. And yet, there are real life stories. There is the Tina Brandon story, which ended in tragedy, and the male version is M. Butterfly, the story of the French diplomat who had a 20-year affair with a Chinese man whom he insisted he always thought was a Chinese woman. So it does happen.
One of the best known. Another was the story of Billy Tipton, the jazz band leader, who was female and married three different women, adopted children, and not until Tipton's death did Tipton's son discover that the father had been really a woman.
There are wonderful implications of what intimacy is all about, and how unphysical it is for some people, that you wouldn't actually, you'd live in a sexual relationship for many years and not actually have access to the genitalia of your partner, that sex is something else for a lot of people.
Well, I know that you are good at deconstructing, and there are subsets and subsets of the subsets in this. What does it give us, though? What does it mean, the deeper significance, that this is so universal and something that I think everyone can share an anecdote with, and there are not many things of which that could be said. What is the meaning for us?
I think the transvestite stories, at least, tell us a great deal about gender, not so much about sex, except that one fact, which is that we don't know what other people do in bed. But it obviously means that the person who's presented as of a gender is sometimes more important than the sexual person. I think it has to open our eyes to other implications of homosexuality, of the way that the sexual identity of an individual is constructed. For instance, there are stories in real life of men, a man who wanted to have a sex change operation so that he could become a lesbian. And the doctor wouldn't do it. He said you'd end up in bed with the same person you'd be if you were a homosexual man. But he wouldn't be the same person. A man having sex with a woman is a different person from a woman. And I think it teaches us not to construct our ideas of our own sexuality in terms of our partners, but in terms of ourselves.
Do you see any successful examples of that?
Of constructing?
High, lofty words, but harder to achieve. Let's ask our callers what they've experienced. We're talking about the bed trick in myth and literature with scholar Wendy Doniger. The number to call is 1-800-423-8255. And the name is Seal, I believe, from New York City. Hello.
Hello. And no wonder I don't watch TV anymore. These are wonderful programs that you're having.
Thank
now,
you so much.
I've been a Sunday school teacher for probably 40 years. I'm quite old now. But I never read that story about Tamar and Judah.
It's right there in the book of Genesis, chapter 38,
39. Genesis what?
Genesis 38.
Genesis 38.
Is that the chapter?
That's the chapter.
And it starts there?
It starts there. It's just a short story, but...
And then the other one with Jacob and Rachel and Leah, I didn't know where that came from.
Also in Genesis, earlier on in Genesis.
I think you better go. Thank you so much, Sue.
Read the Bible again.
You've got a fantastic voice, and you have more work to do in those Sunday schools. Let's go to another call. Al is on the line with us. Hello, Al.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes, thanks for joining the conversation.
I have two questions. One, I wonder whether your guest knows the book by Alain Bourreau called The Lord's First Night.
I do.
Published by Chicago. Apparently, that proves that the droit du seigneur is merely a myth and never really happened in Europe.
Absolutely. It's a wonderful book, and it's a great press that published it, too.
Which happened to publish yours.
not only is it a myth, but it is an unconsummated myth. Almost all the stories we have about the droit du seigneur are about how it didn't happen.
Yeah.
You have it in The Marriage of Figaro, most famously. All these stories about how we are now going to abolish the droit de seigneur, or a woman saying this is a terrible thing and we must stop it. They're all stories of subversion, of resistance.
And this is the right
even in the myth.
This is the right of the king or overlord to sleep with whoever he wishes.
That's
among
right.
the serfs.
Well, I'm sorry. I thought you had stated it as a historical fact in that
one. No, it's a historical myth. But I stated, what I implied, and perhaps it wasn't clear, is that sexual harassment is a sexual, is a historical fact.
Indeed.
And I think these are mythical exaggerations of what was true, which was the king, of course, could have any woman he wanted. He'd kill her or her husband if she didn't sleep with him. So in that sense, it did happen. It simply was not legal.
I have another question. I may have misheard at the beginning. I thought you said that in Midsummer Night's Dream, Hippolyta becomes Titania.
I said in the double casting with which the play is often performed, the same actress plays Hippolyta and Titania, and then the same actor plays Oberon and Theseus.
So
that when the actress who has played Titania, now playing Hippolyta, meets Bottom in a lot of good productions, they know one another, and I think that's one of the great arguments for double casting.
Yes, I see. Thank you very, very much for
Welcome.
Both answers.
Al, thank you. Boy, really good on point. You know, you use a lot of examples, and I think this is so wonderful, and it speaks to the immense flexibility and the kind of multifaceted scholarship that makes you. I guess I should say I took a class with you. This is my day for self-revelation.
You're a great pupil.
On the connection. In terms of going anywhere and everywhere that this applies, and movies are one such place, and television.
Indeed, and one of the reasons the book is so long is because I didn't want it to be a kind of a Joseph Campbell book. I didn't want to say, this is what the bed trick is like, and then go home. The whole point of it is that it's many different things and different cultures. It's different, and it's not just in a single culture. It's not that there's a Japanese way of telling it. There are a lot of different Japanese ways of telling it and different French ways. And in fact, Hollywood also has a great range. There are patterns. The movies of the 40s and 50s tend to recycle the same stories over and over again. That's why Hollywood is such a great myth factory. But there are also different patterns, and the same story, when it's retold years later, can have very different possibilities in it as sexual possibilities change.
Okay. Let's take a call from someone else who's listening. 1-800-423-8255 makes, we have to say it, the bed trick connection. 1-800-423-TALK. Amy, you're on the connection.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have to say, one of my favorite bed tricks coming out of Hollywood, at least out of television, was on the Star Trek The Next Generation, when Dr. Beverly Crusher falls in love with a male alien who turns out to actually be the alien inside, and later when the outer alien dies and is replaced with the female version of that species, she can no longer love that alien inside.
Interesting. So that's a transsexual bed trick.
Right. It's an excellent, and I'll say people who are fans of Star Trek the Next Generation probably all know this one very well, but it's really an excellent story, because it's only at the very end, when she's waiting to see who the new outer alien is, and it turns out to be a woman, that her face just falls.
Did it feel familiar to you, Amy, when you saw that on television?
No.
Any applications in life?
No, I can't say that it did, but it's certainly, I think that episode, it was one of the episodes that I think the gay community really liked, because it was sort of the whole point that, you know, you are who you are inside, and why does it matter what the outside really is? And
Star Trek had a lot of bed tricks. There were two Rikers in The Next Generation, and there were two earlier ones where two different men were in love. You didn't know which was the real one, and she had to choose between Riker A and Riker B. They were wearing different colored T-shirts, I think,
love
is
that
the way
example.
How we knew.
You've got that in your book.
Oh, yeah, that's a great one.
And there's no difference that she can see.
And then the robot explains that we have a sense, we like to think that we're unique, and it's very upsetting to see that there can be other ones like us. But you know, the ultimate point of that Star Trek episode was homophobic, in the sense that she was shocked to think that she could have been in love with a woman. And Hollywood changed. If you get the John Malkovich, being John Malkovich, where you have a situation you had years ago in All of Me with Steve Martin and Lily Tomlin, where a man is in bed with a woman who actually is a man, and it's unacceptable, and they have to stop it. In being John Malkovich, when a woman is pretending to be a man and it turns out there are two women in bed, that's just fine with her. Mm-hmm. And the movie goes on with it and the act is consummated, because 20 years later, you could have two women in bed in a movie. And Star Trek was from that earlier generation when you really couldn't.
I think that's the movie in which he's trying to slow himself down by thinking of dead kittens.
That's
and
right, and
nuns.
And elderly nuns, exactly. She gets inside Steve Martin's head, and he can't make love to a girl because he's a girl.
Sometimes the bed trick has negative consequences, and sometimes the victim is quite pleased. Casanova has to admit that at the beginning of your book. He is seducing what he thinks is some young thing, and it turns out to be a woman, you say too often. And age is associated with something less than desirability here, and much older woman, and then he has to confess that he liked it.
That he exactly, and he's shocked that he enjoyed sex with this old woman, thinking it was his gorgeous young girl, but he doesn't confess it to her. To save face, because he's the great lover, he says to her, he sends her a note, says, actually, it wasn't me in bed with you at all. It was I knew you were going to switch places with the young girl, so I sent my servant, and you slept with him. And that was what I would call a false double cross. That is to say, he implied that he, too, had double-tricked her, whereas he hadn't.
Oh, you're going to be getting calls with from people who want to make this into a parlor game.
It is one of the great parlor games.
Later, when Casanova himself is the elderly age of 50, the elderly age of 53, and feels that his desirability will not avail himself of a young woman he desires, he plays yet another trick.
That's right. And Arthur Schnitzler wrote a wonderful short novella about it, in which he bribes a young man who's in love with a young girl to allow him to take the young man's place in her bed. And he gets away with it. And the girl apparently doesn't know the difference. But she looks at him in the morning and her eyes say, old man. And he's shocked, and it kind of deflates him, and it's the end of his erotic career.
Ah. Let's get your comments about the bed trick. The number to call to join the conversation is 1-800-423-8255. 1-800-423-TALK makes the bed trick connection. Susan is on the line with us. Hello.
Good morning.
Hi.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for joining us.
I haven't read the book, but I wondered if you talk about two plays. One is Machiavelli's The Mandragora.
You know, I don't. It's a great one, but it's not in the book.
Okay, and the other is The Spanish Friar by Dryden.
That is in, yes. That whole period of Renaissance, there's a whole series of plays, very elaborate ones in right before and after Shakespeare as well. But I didn't put Machiavelli in. I should have. Thank you.
Can you just elaborate, Susan, a little bit about what is in The Mandragora, the Machiavelli play?
Well, what's funny is that he sets out to write a comedy. You think of Machiavelli as this dastardly, awful person, and the plot, I suppose, is fairly dastardly. There's a young man who falls in love with a young woman who happens to be married to an old man. So the young man offers the old man a sort of Renaissance version of Viagra, a mandrake root product called Mandragora, I guess. And the trick is that what he tells the old man is that the first person who sleeps with her after she takes the Mandragora potion will die. So they have to find someone who will sleep with her before the old man does again. And the young man says he'll find someone to sleep with her. And, of course, he disguises himself and sleeps with her.
A willing volunteer. Mm. You once had a wonderful example that I recall, which I don't believe is in this book, about if you really want to draw this out, where in Dracula made me think of it, mm-hmm. Lucy, who is being saved with all these blood mm-hmm. transfusions, is actually mm-hmm. commingling, mm-hmm. if you will, bodily with her various saviors.
And they're regarded as marriages. Their blood flows through one another's veins and into her veins. There's also a sort of a covert homosexual sexuality, that they are also in bed with one another, like Typhoid Mary. But Lucy herself, in a sense, is also a more general, a metaphorical bed trick character, because Lucy is a pure and sweet young girl, and all of a sudden she becomes lustful. So by definition, it can't be the same Lucy. We know Lucy. She wouldn't do that. So she split into two different Lucys, the real Lucy, whom we all know and love, and the transformed Lucy, who is simply the sexuality of the normal Lucy, which is unacceptable in Victorian eyes. So they make her into a trickster. They say she's transformed magically, whereas she's simply expressing another unacceptable part of her personality.
It's wonderful how these plot devices are connected. Let's try and get one more call, the bed trick on the connection, 1-800-423-8255. Don is calling from Burlington, Vermont. Hello, Don.
How you doing?
Great.
I was just wondering if the incubus-succubus myths are related to this at all.
They sure are. They certainly are. They're among the great medieval variants. You know, the incubus and succubus were demons that would assail the... I always get them mixed up. The succubus would assail the man, and the incubus would assail the woman, usually in the form of someone that they knew. And because Satan cannot procreate by himself, it was said that he would become... a succubus, an incubus, and sleep with a man and get the man's semen, and then he would become an incubus and I've got them mixed up again, and sleep with the woman and impregnate her with the semen he had taken from a man when he had slept with him in the form of the other one, whichever one it is, right. And that's how people would get pregnant. They know not how. So that's a great, even in itself, it's a bit trick story, but it has a double whammy when Satan plays it.
Thank you, Don.
You know, there was an interesting parallel that Carl Sagan made between that and the alien abduction thing of today, where the alien just comes right through the wall and does some kind of probes to the person while he or she is sleeping.
Well, an Invasion of the Body Snatchers is another one of the great bed trick movies when Becky comes on, and Becky is the last one who has not become invaded by the aliens, and then she falls asleep and he kisses her, and his eyes grow, Kevin McCarthy's eyes grow wide, and he says, "I never knew what fear was until I kissed Becky."
Becky the pod person.
Becky the pod
person. Which you do write about in the book. You know, my favorite sounds so, you know, right after these marvelous, thank you, Don, for great examples, Superman, you know.
Oh, yes.
And I know you like Superman, too.
Superman is a great one.
The comic
book, it's not a bed trick, because in the comic book, he can't possibly sleep with Lois Lane. And any true Superman aficionado knows that they never really do have sex. But in the movie, he does. And there's a wonderful moment when she looks at him and says, "Are all your powers super?" And apparently they are. But she never knows who she's in bed with. She scorns the lowly Clark Kent.
You don't think she knows a little that it's Clark?
Maybe she knows.
Okay. You're listening to The Connection on NPR. We're talking about the bed trick, Superman, and the number to call is 1-800-423-8255. The Connection on NPR. I'm Jackie Lydon, and this is, believe it or not, the Bed Trick Connection. My guest is Dr. Wendy Doniger, author of The Bed Trick, Tales of Sex and Masquerade. Wendy, some people, Freud among them, say that in sex we encounter our most authentic selves, that sex reveals who we really are. Others say, look at the bed trick. Sex conceals. You say it does both.
I think that's why it's a powerful story. It's a paradox. Most myths do have a paradox in them, balancing two true things, both of which are true and which contradict each other. And it's not that one myth tells it one way and another way. They're both together. I think the story and most of us really do believe that sexual intimacy is revealing. You really get to know a person. in the true story, The Return of Martin Guerre, that Natalie Zeman Davis wrote about, when a man pretending to be Martin Guerre came back, they said, well, he could fool the rest of the village, but he couldn't really fool his wife. I think we really feel pillow talk. You tell the truth, you relax, and so forth. And at the same time, Shakespeare and everybody else tells us that Cupid is blind, that when you're in love, you're totally besotted. You wake up, you say, what did I ever see in him? How could I ever have married him? Why did I believe all those lies he told me? And I think to some extent, we are all very deceptive about sex. When you're in love, you put a lot of makeup, you try to look good to the guy, you try to conceal your faults from him, you present your best self.
Conceal his faults from you.
And he does the same, and you want him to conceal mm-hmm. him. You fool yourself about him. You want to believe that the person who's in love with you is wonderful because then somebody wonderful is in love with you. And as the evidence mounts up that he is not wonderful, you ignore it, you deny it, you do all sorts of things. So I think we all really do know that there's an enormous amount of deception. It's not only, I think when Clinton lied, everybody said, big deal, he lied about sex. Everybody lies about sex.
Sex is deception. Let's take some calls, 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. Jesse is on the line with us. Hello, Jesse.
Hi, how are you today?
Fine.
I have a little real-life bed trick. It wasn't intentional, of course.
Well, they never are.
Of course.
When I was in college, on one of my birthdays, I went out with the boys and the crowd of people, and at the end of the night, probably 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, we came back, and my one friend said, listen, why don't you just crash out in June's apartment, and when she comes home, send her up to my apartment. Well, there I am lying in bed, face up. I mean, I look nothing like my friend, and
but it was dark?
Actually, the light came on, and I opened my eyes just a slit. You understand it was late, and it was my birthday, and I wasn't moving.
We got
much.
That part, Jesse.
There had been a certain amount of drinking.
A certain amount, yeah. So, she came in. I figured, well, she'll recognize me, and she'll at least ask a question or something. And she strips down and jumps in bed with me. And we snuggle up, and I'm like, well, I'm singing happy birthday to myself in my own head. But, I was not going to be, initiate things, as it were. So the next morning we wake up. Actually, Gary came into the apartment and looks over. He thought we found out later, he thought I was in bed with her roommate. He gave me the thumbs up and went back to his apartment. A few minutes later, this girl wakes up and she mentioned something, and it's like, life is good. And I said, you're telling me? And she turns around, grabs the covers, pulls him up around her, and starts screaming, what am I doing in bed with her?
Who are you?
What are you doing here?
So it was a double bed trick. She thought you were somebody else, and her boyfriend thought that she was somebody else.
Exactly.
And no trickster involved.
No trickery involved.
I just wonder, Jesse, how many times have you told that story over the years?
Oh, boy, too many times.
My question to you is, do you think she really knew who you were?
She had no idea. She had no idea until she said something in the morning, and I said, you bet. And she looked, she just clutched the blankets and turned around, and it's like, you're not Gary. I said, hi, June, how you doing?
Thank you, Jesse. That's a great story.
It's nice to have my faith in bed tricks reaffirmed.
Let's take a couple more calls. 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. Jane is on the line.
Hi, I'm so pleased to be on the show. I don't know if this example is in your book or not, but it's an example from literature, from a book by Robertson Davies called The Lyre of Orpheus.
Oh, it is. It's a great one. Arthur. Yes.
Yes. Where shall I?
Tell a story if you like.
Please.
It's a great story.
I love The Lyre of Orpheus.
And I've read it a while ago, so you may have a better version than me. But there's a couple in the story that are not sleeping together. The husband isn't very interested in sex, and they have a friend who's been staying over the house a lot, who is physically somewhat resembles the husband.
And puts on his bathrobe.
Pardon?
And puts on his special bathrobe.
Right, and puts on his special bathrobe and comes into her room one night, and they sleep together, and she becomes pregnant and has a child, and the husband kind of knows what happened, but never really says anything, as I recall.
It's wonderful. And they're putting on an opera about King Arthur. And in the story of King Arthur himself is born as the result of a bed trick, because his father, Uther Pendragon, pretends to be somebody else to impregnate the woman that gives birth to King Arthur. And there are bed tricks later on between Galahad and Elaine. The whole of the King Arthur legend is full of bed tricks. And in this story, the way Robertson Davies tells it, there's a wonderful line, because afterwards, the man who did the seduction of a woman whose name, the woman's name Maria, Arthur's wife, right. He says, "I know I betrayed Arthur. I don't know if I know I deceived Arthur. I don't know if I deceived Maria." And it's right. A pun on the word deceive, like you deceive a friend, but also you deceive someone by perpetrating an illusion. So the answer is he knew he had done the dirty on his best friend, which is what the story of Arthur is all about with Lancelot, but he was not sure whether the woman knew who she was in bed with or not. And we never really know for sure.
Jane, do you take a lesson in all this, a bed trick lesson from this?
Do I?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Not a personal one.
That's all right. Give us your bottom line on it.
Well, I guess that in a situation where, the woman, it worked out well for everyone. So I guess there are situations where
no harm is done.
All bad, right? Where no harm is done.
I think even more than that, I think she wanted it. Her husband wasn't sleeping with her,
right?
And so maybe she wanted to believe that it was. She wanted
right.
the
she
deception.
She wanted to believe it was
And
him,
so
definitely.
She deceived herself, in a sense. She helped the trickster along because what she... And I think that's the way a lot of the bed tricks happen, is that people aren't really, really, really fooled. They're partly fooled, and then their own will for it to happen, sometimes just their lust, but sometimes other deeper motives, like wanting to get pregnant,
right.
make it happen. I think it's hard to fool someone... What is it? You can't cheat an honest man, W.C. Fields used to say. It's hard to deceive someone sexually who doesn't want to be deceived sexually.
Jane, thanks so much for that great example from the Canadian author Robertson Davies. I think, too, that the bed tricks teach us that, ambivalence is the human condition.
Yes. You want it and you don't want it. You want to be yourself and love for yourself, but you also want people to think you're better than you are.
Yeah. And opposing things are true at the same time, fear and desire.
You want intimacy. You fear intimacy. Gross. You want to really reveal yourself so the person in bed with you really knows who you are, but you're afraid to do that.
2 minutes
Maybe
later,
he
you
won't
want to be
like you.
Else. Yes, exactly. We'll go to 1-800-423-8255 is the call to make the bed trick connection, and we'll go to another call. John, welcome to the connection, the bed trick connection.
Yeah, hi.
Hi.
I just wanted to ask you if you have discussed, or if in the book you discuss what seems to me the most common bed trick and one of the most hard to penetrate is simply one or the other person fantasizing about
yes.
another person and unknown to the partner. It seems to me that is sort of the ultimate bed trick.
It is indeed the ultimate bed trick. It's at the basis of all bed tricks. I mean, these stories are fantasies. Robertson Davies' book is a fantasy and so forth. Freud once said that any time there are two people making love, there are four people in the bed.
Or at least three.
Well, and then the question is, who are the other two people?
Right.
His mother,
yes.
her father.
I think it's such a common thing.
Yes.
It happens, I think, maybe to almost everybody.
I think so, too. And I think one of the reasons why the bed trick is such a popular story is because in the history of the world, most people haven't been in bed with the people they wanted to be in bed with.
Right.
There's the problem of women being given away in marriage and all of that, which is at the basis of stories like Beauty and the Beast. Your father makes you marry someone. But just the people we fall in love with don't always fall in love back with us. So
right.
you're not always in the bed you want to be with. And you get bored, even if you
right.
are in
exactly.
the bed you want to be with
exactly.
after a while.
Yeah.
So I think that sexual fantasy is really one of the most important of human
yeah.
abilities.
Okay.
And I think that's what these stories are about. I think you're
okay.
absolutely right.
Thank
Very
you,
good.
John.
Sure.
And I think, Wendy, that is also why perhaps you find these stories everywhere. I mean, I was really amazed. Inuit Eskimo culture, for example. Bedouin culture, in Arabia. Hindu culture, we've already mentioned. Japanese, Native American culture.
I don't want to make a claim that it's universal. I think you get into a lot of trouble. There's probably a culture somewhere which doesn't have bed tricks in it. But it certainly is cross-cultural. That is to say, it's not an American story or a Japanese story. And certainly the phenomenon from which it stems, which is sexual frustration, the lack of the imagination being satisfied, even if the body is, must be universal.
Okay. 1-800-423-8255 to make the bed trick connection. Dan, welcome to the show.
Yeah, hi. I wanted to mention a kind of a family of bed trick stories, kind of magical stories.
Yeah.
That come from the British Isles. You know, there's this old folk song I remember from 20 years ago or so where the king goes to a hunting hall and the awful beast comes and ravens down and demands food and drink, and he has to kill all his dogs and his horses and his goshawks, and then the beast says, make me a bed, now come down and sleep with me, King Henry. And he has to sleep with the ugly, awful monster. But in the morning, the sun comes up, and it's a beautiful woman, kind of symbolic, I believe, of kind of acquiring empire, kingship.
Yep.
And also, of course, the Wife of Bath's Tale.
Yes. That's the variant of the same thing, what I call the loathly lady theme, which is that the heroic knight is forced to, a hideous hag does a great favor for a knight, and in return she demands that he sleep with her or kiss her, depending on how the story is told. And as a reward, she turns into a lovely young thing. And the Chaucer variant on it, which is so cunning, says that he can choose. He can either have her forever, young and beautiful or old, but if she's beautiful, she'll be unfaithful, and if she's old, she'll be faithful. And that's Chaucer's wonderful twist on this theme of the king who has to sleep with the hideous beast, who actually rewards him by turning out to be a lovely young thing.
Well, I like it, I have to say. I don't know what this says about me, but I like it when the elderly women disguise themselves, get who they want, and go, ha, 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 the woman who steals her daughter's eyes, her daughter-in-law's eyes.
That's a terrible story.
It's scary.
That's the Bedouin story. And there's also the woman, the Inuit story of the woman who skins her daughter, kills her daughter, skins her, because people are good at skinning. Annie Dillard tells this story wonderfully in Pilgrim at Tinker Creek. She skins the daughter and puts on the daughter's skin and tries to sleep with her son-in-law, the daughter's husband, and he sees her skinny old lady's legs sticking out from underneath the skin, and he's on to her, and he runs away, and she doesn't get him.
Bed tricks protect patrimony, don't they?
Yes.
Lineage.
Bed tricks also are used in cunning ways to explain, to make legitimate people who are not legitimate. The idea that you thought you were in bed with someone who wasn't your husband, but luckily it really was your husband. A lie is told about a bed trick taking place. You actually were not in bed with your husband, but it's convenient for all parties concerned to manufacture retrospectively the idea that there was a bed trick, and therefore your baby is his baby and we can all be happy.
Wendy Doniger, I want to thank you for a fantastic conversation. There are so many places to go in this tome. I hope it will be everyone's summer pick.
I hope so, too.
My guest is Wendy Doniger, the author of The Bed Trick, Tales of Sex and Masquerade. Connection listeners, you can continue the bed trick conversation on our website at theconnection.org. And we will leave you today with the last scene from Some Like It Hot, one of the all-time great bed trick movies. This is Joey Brown playing an eager would-be bridegroom and Jack Lemmon in drag. I'm Jackie Lydon.
I call Mama. She was so happy she cried. She wants you to have her wedding gown. It's white lace.
Yeah, Osgood, I can't get married in your mother's dress. She and I, we are not built the same way.
We can have it altered.
Yeah, no, you don't. Osgood, I'm going to level with you. We can't get married at all.
Why not?
Well, in the first place, I'm not a natural blonde.
Doesn't matter.
I smoke. I smoke all the time.
I don't care.
Well, I have a terrible past. For 3 years now, I've been living with a saxophone player.
I forgive you.
I can never have children.
We can adopt some.
But you don't understand, Osgood. I'm a man.
Well, nobody's perfect.
This is